If you tuned in earlier in the week, we were talking about, can we break the buy the dippers? Well, they fought back Tuesday and Wednesday. They were fighting back most of the day on Thursday, but as Dennis would say, kaplooey! We'll see what happens today. It's all about the jobs number. Bad, good. Let's see if we get a rally. But you know what? There could be some sellers out there. Eric Kroll, 8:15. You want to know everything about the Reddit IPO? Tune in at 8:15. We got a merger by J&J, kind of already rumored. We got a ton to cover. Let's get started. It's Friday on Pre-Market Prep.
Welcome to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, good morning, traders and investors. Well, we made a low for the week on a Friday. We'll see if that low holds just under Thursday's low. We're up 20 handles, 52.17 the quarter. The buy the dipper is still lurking. Buck up 13 cents, back over 104 at 104.03. TLT down a little bit, but maybe a flight to safety yesterday. We'll talk about that with Dennis. Crude up 12 cents, 86.71, making that assault on 90 bucks. Gold and silver going opposite directions. Gold up $3, 23.11 and a half. Silver down 40 cents at 26.85. And Bitcoin futures doing some work into 66K handle, down over $1,900 at 66,905. So let me bring in Triple D here, who absolutely picked the worst possible day for us to do a guest lecture at the university. Well, I guess we could call it the best possible day.
Best possible day for the guest. We'd love to have been trading that, though. That was some wild action, but we were lecturing. Actually, we're at the University of Windsor. I went to the University of Windsor for my undergrad. Great to lecture. Great group of kids. We started lecturing just after 2 o'clock. We got there and we were live. And the S&Ps, like, I had that shirt up, I'm like, they're just falling and falling. I'm like, holy. And then, you know, we're looking what's going on. Obviously, multiple headlines, tensions in the Middle East, and then the cash carry comments, which we'll get to here in a second. Bring in AB. It was fun, though, Joel. It was fun. A great group of kids. Love, you know, when we get out to the universities and do some lecturing.
Yeah, I want to shout out to Jack and Robert and Evan. Dennis, I wish you would have been there at the second part, because they were showing me some Excel spreadsheet and my head was spinning, man. Very, very smart kids over there. But AB lurking in the background here on opening day in Detroit. Tigers 5-1. Tough loss in the second game, but
I thought they were going 162-0. I really did. I had it. I'm like, they're going 162-0 this year. Now all hope is now gone. Are they going to be 500 this year? We're going to be 500, though.
I hope so. I think they'll have a chance to win the AL Central. Actually, there's a
seriously. You think they're not good?
It's not sweet. It's
Lions and Tigers.
It's a week.
At the same time.
It's a weak division. The Tigers are looking good. The pitching's looking good. They need to get the lineup going a little bit. Some of the guys, I mean, Riley Green hasn't started going yet. Parker Meadows, the rookie, he was batting leadoff yesterday's. When I saw his average was less than 100, but it's still early. So we'll see if those bats can get going. I'm not expecting a high scoring game today. It's pretty chilly, so he's taking the under.
Oh boy, yeah,
it's pretty cold. Well, Joel, that's like how they used to, you know, like back in the days when, you know, Boomer Chris Berman was announcing all the games and stuff. Back when sports betting was still illegal, they had to very like surreptitiously say, you know, like they would score a touchdown at the end of the game and say, oh well, that mattered for some people out there, you know. But now
I can't even.
Now it's not plastered.
It wasn't plastered all over the screen. The running odds, DraftKings, and all of them all over the bottom ticker going.
Now it's just like, oh, there's the over. The over hit, and it's all over. Everyone can talk about it. So it's crazy to see how quickly that's changed.
Jimmy the Greek got fired for making comments. You guys are probably too young to remember Jimmy the Greek, but he actually got booted for
And that would be racist now. You can't say that they're Greek.
Okay, Jimmy.
No, I know. It's not.
Go before we lose everybody.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So yesterday we were trading higher. We talked about in the morning, we were talking about how, you know, that jobs number kind of came in that Goldilocks sweet spot. Things were looking good. I mean, the market was up. It looked like, you know, record highs were in reach. And then we had some Fed speakers. It was a barrage of hawkish Fed speakers. Starting at noon with Barkin came in and gave some questions about rate cuts. And that didn't really move markets too much. Then you had Chicago's Austin Goolsbee come in at around 1:15 talking about that. You know, he was saying that housing inflation is still too high. We need to bring this down, rate cuts. And then the market started to sell off a little bit more. But then your big kicker came after that with the Fed's Kashkari came in and was basically saying, I don't see any reason why the Fed needs to cut rates right now. This and that. And it's like, it's like there's almost there's a huge divide right now. And
there
what
is.
Powell is saying at the top and then what everyone else is saying below. So if you're looking at, the saying goes, don't fight the Fed, but that becomes harder to not fight the Fed when you don't even know what the Fed's doing, when the Fed doesn't even know what it's doing. So,
I mean, it's hard, you know, when we don't even know who to fight here, because you're exactly right. We've got, you know, two days ago morning, Bostic saying one. We know Powell's still thinking three because he said it, you know, so he's thinking three. And then you've got Cash Carey coming out yesterday and saying, I don't know why we need to cut rates at all. So you had multiple. So that all of that. And then you had the tensions in the Middle East. So you had, you know, the safety trade going on as well. War trade starting to happen. Lockheed Martin ripping and General Dynamics ripping and NOC bouncing yesterday. And then oil was bouncing. So you had multiple headlines, all bad news for the S&P, all happening at the exact moment that me and Joel were speaking at the end.
Dennis, explain the safety trade.
Well, safety trade is going to go into your bonds. So bonds started getting a lift. And you would think, like, naturally, and again, you know, I was tweeting out from I didn't even realize, you know, the tensions in the Middle East had escalated there. I saw the cash carry comments, and I thought that was it. But then there was also the Middle East comments. You're going to see, you know, when you get worries, you know, about war, obviously, you know, oil starts to get bought. But when you get other, you know, worries too, it's a safety of bonds. So under normal circumstances, the TLT would have got hammered on those cash carry comments yesterday, but the reaction was very muted because they were moving in there because, oh my goodness, we're going into war times maybe here. So multiple headlines obviously happening at the same time. All bad for the SPY, only partially bad for the TLT with cash carry comments because, I mean, if they're not going to raise interest rates, you know, at all, I mean, or lower interest rates at all, I mean, that's not good for the TLT, but the TLT shrugged it off because the safety trade was on.
Well, I know I didn't keep up, I guess, exactly yesterday, because I know we don't really talk about a lot in the show, avoid a lot of controversial topics, but I saw the one headline about, you know, aid workers that were bombed in Gaza, and then Biden yesterday called for an immediate ceasefire. But what was the exact headline about the rising tension yesterday, Dennis?
I was at the University of Windsor on the exact headline, so I don't have the exact headline.
Okay.
I just
maybe
know
it was maybe it was from the
multiple.
The...
So Blinken, for one, I know Blinken. I don't know what time that was. Talked about Ukraine joining NATO. So I mean, that's a major scary headline because we know that's going to equal war with Russia, like us going to war with Russia. So I don't know what this commentary from Blinken was, and I don't know exactly what time that was. But it was around that time where he said he sees eventually Ukraine in NATO. Putin would have been really pissed off hearing that, like to the extreme. Yeah. You know, Putin wanted to be, you know, Russia wanted to be in NATO years ago. And, you know, obviously NATO said no. So, you know, bringing Ukraine in, which they're at war with, that is not going to, you know, ease tensions there whatsoever.
Yeah, but there's
so been... I'm not sure if those were the exact comments, but I will tell you, the market is going to start thinking war. You start talking about Ukraine joining NATO when Russia is at war with Ukraine, that means we go to war with Russia. That's World War III. I agree with the chat. That's a ridiculous. I don't know what Blinken is thinking, saying something like that, but he said it. I don't know why he said that. Maybe, you know, there's some other, you know, reasons here that we don't know about behind the scenes. But when I see that, I think World War III. I think the market thought World War III. I think that's, you know, one of the major headlines too. And then you get cash carry piling on and say we don't need interest rate cuts.
What time did Blinken start? Blinken? What time was that?
It was around then, Joel.
But yeah. the talk about Ukraine joining NATO, that's been going on, I mean, even since before the most recent conflict with Russia. So, like, I don't know if that would have been the big mover. I would assume that anything geopolitical.
But he said it yesterday.
I know, I but mean, I would assume
it,
that
wherever he was talking, he said it.
I assume anything geopolitical would happening would be more about what's going on in Israel and Palestine.
And
right
that
now.
As well. So you have those concerns too. But if you just told me that, you know, Blinken was going to say Ukraine, NATO, yes, I think that's something to do with it as well. I think there was a lot of bad headlines for the S&P yesterday.
I mean, there's been a lot. Like,
wasn't this one, or was it this one, or was it this one, or we can trade the action? Because I can tell you there was multiple headlines and multiple reasons for people to be selling the S&P yesterday. This is the bloody index is, you know, 0.5% from all-time highs, and then you get, you know, a Fed official talking, not voting, but talking about no interest rate cuts at all. You get Blinken talking about NATO joining Ukraine, and you have escalations in the Middle East, in Israel as well here, AB. Lots of reasons to say, hey, maybe I should take some profits. And that's the stocks that were going down the most. The big winners, they were NVIDIA's, obviously. They were taking profits there. They were taking profits across the board.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the sectors that got hit the hardest on this news. And I mean, unsurprisingly, it was all the interest rate sensitive sectors, which is, you know, most of them. But I mean, the ones that are more prone to, you know, interest rate movements got hit the hardest. So you're talking semiconductors. If you pull up, you know, AMD closed down nearly like 10% yesterday. You had, you know, all the semis, SMCI, NVIDIA, AMD, all got crushed on that. Well, yeah, let's stick on AMD for a second, and then we'll move over to the other sectors that got hit hard.
Well, it's getting a little love from Piper Sandler this morning, maintaining their super buy rating. I'm not sure what the price target is. All I know is it's like it's not the best day to probably, you know, for like this rating or price target change to come out, because a lot of people, they're stuck, right? So what for this one, first of all, it's all going to be dependent. Whatever I'm saying now could be dependent on what happens at 8:30. Pre-market high 168.52. I'd keep an eye on that target. I don't think there's any way that we could get back up to yesterday's high at 183.02. So you just have to pick your poison on this. On the downside, you don't want to see it go red. You don't want to see a bad number. You don't want to see it take out yesterday's low. If, in fact, it takes out yesterday's low, my next identifiable area of support comes in at 162. But as I said, whatever I say now and what happens at 8:30, it's going to have an impact, especially for this high beta stock.
Well, yeah.
I was going to say, again, to my point, it was profit-taking yesterday. It wasn't like, you know, there were some stocks that were holding up okay, but, I mean, AMD has been one of the biggest winners on the year. It loses $15 yesterday. It was full money managers saying, I'm booking some profits. You know, I don't know what's going on. Iran situation, obviously, with Israel. I don't know what's going on with, you know, cash carry saying no interest rate cuts all of a sudden. I don't know what's going on. I'm raising some cash. And then it just snowballed. You know, you start seeing the selling, begets more selling, begets more selling. I mean, it was a 100-point sell-off. You know, almost 100-point sell-off in a matter of 2 hours. Selling. That's the biggest sell-off of the year, I think, isn't it, Joel?
I think
that's
true.
Yeah, I mean, intraday it has to be. And I mean, selling begets more selling until it begets enough selling to where then it starts begetting buying because it gets too low and people start. So, but you know, just real quick, because we're about to bring on Eric Kroll to talk some IPOs. The other biggest sectors that got hit are the ones I was watching, at least for the clean energy space. You look at TAN, got absolutely crushed. As well as regional banks, of course, because regional banks have been struggling with these interest rates for, you know, a couple of years now. And you know, there was some hope that with cuts, the regional banks would be coming back. KRE took a hit again as well. So everything really got hammered. But you look at those three sectors between semis, clean energy, regional banks. I mean, it's clear to see where the weak ones were. And then, you know, I mean, those could be your leaders as soon as we do actually start getting rate cuts. So, I mean, it's just, if you're in those sectors, if you're heavily invested in those sectors, you know, that you have outweight in your portfolio, you have to be okay with, I guess, taking some of this volatility, because we really don't know what's going on with interest rates right now. And to our point earlier, I don't even think the Fed knows what's going on with interest rates, let alone us. So, you know, it's just a lot of uncertainty out there.
I was thinking about this yesterday, and as a long-term investor, everyone on Twitter and everyone always is right, and they hedge at the perfect timing, and they do it all. The best thing you can do in your long-term portfolio is just ride it out. You know, if you're buying good companies at reasonable valuations, the best thing you can do. And I look, and I was a much better investor 5 to 10 years ago when I didn't hear everybody, you know, just giving their opinions on my stocks continuously, you know, where I held Apple for 500%, I held Google for 1,000%, and I held MasterCard for 2,000%, you know, and people are like, well, how do you hold? Well, I didn't look at it. I didn't look at the stuff. I didn't log in my portfolio every day. But now, because, you know, we're full disclosure, we do a live show, I'm telling everybody what I've got, you know, when I've got it. And then people are just, you know, hammering me, wanting me to sell NVIDIA every single day as it was going up.
Let's go.
And Joel, too, trying to sell your NVIDIA. So I'm just saying, I think a lot of times you've got to completely separate it. Trade, you could trade headlines, trade the technicals, but I still think from your long-term investing portfolio, buy good companies at reasonable valuations. And to your point, AB, don't get caught up on every single headline, because that's the hardest thing. The real wealth is creating from ignoring it all. And you know, and that's what I've been doing wrong lately.
Yes,
trading my
long
term portfolio way too much.
We gotta go there.
We're bringing Eric in right now. Yeah, let's get Eric.
Okay, bring him in. Eric Cole, the life cycle trade author. We got you on here 8:15, nice and early. I got your presentation here. Let's get it started. Slow year, 22 to 23 here. What about 24?
You know, it's starting to heat up a little bit. Not only are we getting more IPOs in the first quarter of this year, we're getting some of the better ones. We have finally seen IPOs like Reddit. They've been rumoring to go public for a couple years. They raised the most capital so far this year. They raised around $780 billion. The performance hasn't been so great so far. And then a couple other ones. We had Astera Labs, that was the second biggest. Then we had a REIT, American Healthcare REIT. They own doctor offices, basically. And then another one from Mexico, it was BBB Foods. And I think it stands for like Bueno Bonita and something else. But they're a supermarket chain. So we're starting to see some good IPOs. To me, the most interesting is Reddit, because they are an IPO of a company that still has negative earnings, and we'll see how the market likes to treat companies with negative earnings. The IPO market in the last 2 years has not treated them very well.
Let's get to Reddit one second. I just want to ask you, are you a little surprised because the interest rate environment, you think with IPOs and stuff, are, you know, factor, non-factor, but don't you think you need, like, you know, just a, you know, rates to slow down a little bit for these, for the IPOs?
I'm not too surprised, only because we're 2 years past the bear market, and IPOs tend to start rising more after a bear market, like that one graph you showed. You can see that the histogram of when the IPOs come, they typically come when the market starts getting better like it is now. One of the things I'm showing here with this chart is this. In our original research, we found that only 28% of all IPOs trade more than $20 million of volume a day, which puts it on the radar screen of institutional investors. And if you can see on the right side, in the last 2 years, it's only 12% of them. So we're not getting the highest quality IPOs in the last couple of years.
Okay.
So that's why I showed that. Is like normally it's about 28% are institutional quality, and now we're less than half of that. But we're starting to see some more. Reddit's trading more than that right now, as is Astera Labs. And a few others. So we're starting
but
to see
your,
the better quality.
To your point, Eric, what were the big ones last year? I mean, you think about this. We've had big ones. I can't even think of the big one last year. Who was the big one last year?
I forget when Kava came out.
I mean, we're not talking like, you know, these are game-changing, like major, you know, like Facebook coming out here. We haven't had those, like, you know, huge, you know, mega cap, you know, like coming in here and going to change the whole markets. I mean, Kava. Kava's our big one. So you're right. This is a great point you're making. It's right. Just been Reddit's pretty cool, but I mean, Reddit is not Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, when Kava, like the Mediterranean Chipotle comes out, and we're talking about that one like it's the next big thing, but you're right. It's not Facebook. It's not Google. It's not anything like that. It's not changing the way we, you know, work, live, and play, kind of a thing.
All right, so let's go to the top 10 IPOs since 2022. See how what kind of gains they've had. So sectors, let's see the volume, and we'll talk about where they are at in the life cycle, trade cycle.
Yeah, when you're looking at these, and you can see now I'm going over 2 years here, and there's only five that have even gained more than 50% from their day one close. So again, even the performance hasn't been that well. And a few of them are ones that just came out this year. So the number 10 there, Astera Labs, came out this year. BBB Foods came out this year. American Sports came out this year. American Sports, they have brands like Wilson and a few other things. So it just shows you that the ones that came out recently are the ones doing the best. Like Arm Holdings is one I'm really interested in.
That was probably the big one from last year.
Yeah. And what's hard about that one is it's really not a new stock, right? I mean, it was traded many years. So we're looking at an old stock that re-IPO'd, but that's probably the biggest and in terms of volume traded and great performance.
So far as AI goes, we have the Arm here. I'm not really super familiar with these other companies. We talked about the AI theme, restaurants. I mean, solar. I mean, how about that? Nextracker, solar kind of going the opposite way. Makes you a little bit cautious on that one, just the energy sector, or are they like a low-cost provider of solar energy?
Well, they're the ones that add on to existing solar fields. They're the ones that add on hardware and software that allows the panels to follow the sun better and track it in the sky as the sun moves. So it improves the efficiency of existing fields. So instead of having to build a new field with Nextracker, they're a product that allows you to get more out of existing fields. So that's why that one's been moving well. Not so much lately. But yeah, so that's one to watch. Astera Labs is an AI play. I've read through what they do. I don't understand it, but I know that in terms of with connectivity and other things, it allows AI hardware to be faster and connect better. So,
wow. And next time I have you on, let's get to 10 worst IPOs.
Oh, I can show you some really bad ones.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Lyft, Rivian. I mean, boy, there could be a whole lot of them. All right. So these are the top 10 performers, and really you see the separation up there, but let's get a little more current here, a little bit more into the cycle. Let's focus on these three stocks, Kava Group, Arm Holdings, and Reddit. Kava, I mean, you had the undercut of the IPO rally, perhaps some institutional accumulation late in 23. Now in the rally stage here, maybe contributed to the market. What's your setup and outlook here for Kava Group?
I love the way it's set up. To me, this is the it's kind of hard to call this the institutional advance phase, but it did have an IPO advance and then it undercut it, like you said, and then came back up. It's looking very strong. We have had a history of stocks in the restaurant field that have a great concept, and then they grow and they expand that concept around the country. And so there's potentially a lot of room to grow with this one. I mean, we've seen Chipotle do in the past, McDonald's. I mean, we can all come up with all the restaurant brands that have come up over the years that have a good concept and keep growing. And I think that's the possibility here. Arm Holdings, again, they are really looking strong. They had a great, you can see that little U-shaped cup in the very beginning and the weekly chart there. And then it broke out of that and started in advance. I'm calling this the institutional advance phase for two reasons. One, it's an older stock. It's been around for a while. We have a great history on this one. And two, it seemed to just have the right kind of action to make it look like it's not really an IPO advance phase. And it's getting rocked around a little bit with a lot of AI stocks in the last 4 or 5 weeks, but I think it's a good play. And then I'm just showing Reddit there. That's a daily chart. The first two are weekly. Reddit just started trading like 2 weeks ago. I've been on the show before. I tell people never buy day one and never even buy a stock until it's formed some sort of pattern and breaks out of it. Most of them undercut their day one low, like Reddit did, as did ARM, as did Kava. Yeah. And Reddit is, to me, I'm just watching it because I'm curious. Like I said earlier, they don't have positive earnings yet, and they don't project positive earnings out until the end of this year, where the last quarter is supposed to make a penny. So I'm not a big fan of IPOs that are in established areas like the internet that don't make money yet. So we'll see. And their sales growth has been subpar. I like to see sales growth quarter over quarter, at least 25% or more. They've had one quarter like that of the last six. So we'll see what happens. We'll see how the market treats it. But right
how
now,
about DJT? I want to go real quickly to, I know it's a SPAC or not.
It wasn't
doing
an IPO.
Yeah, you're doing that to IPO or any research?
You cover the SPACs?
I don't have that one, but if you bring up the chart, we can talk about it.
Okay. Yeah, let me let me go right here. DJT, boom, boom, boom.
The Donald okay. J. Trump one, right?
Yeah, yeah, you got it.
Yeah. It's had two bursts. That one in the that in the beginning there, you can see that one. And then it kind of went sideways, and then this other burst. Most SPACs have a big jump when they announce the merger candidate. And then after that, they typically go sideways. And after that sideways, I call that the due diligence phase, then they can start a run. It looks like it tried to start a run here, but they came right, got pushed right back. We'll see what happens. I could show you hundreds of charts of SPACs, as you guys have seen, that look terrible. There's only been a few that have done pretty well, like DraftKings comes to mind. We'll see how this one goes. I mean, this one will be tied to Trump, right? We'll see what
his right.
Goes right back to the conversation we were having right before he came on, Eric, about, you know, buying good companies at reasonable valuations. The biggest problem with most of the IPOs is obviously the underwriters all get greedy, everybody else gets greedy, and these prices come out and they're just not reasonable. And that's why over the long term, you see underperformance typically with a lot of these IPOs. You do get the odd diamond in the rough where it's just a good company and it's actually come out at a not, maybe it's came out, but maybe it's just grown enough to grow into a valuation. But I mean, that's the biggest issue, isn't it? Just valuation and where they're eventually listing these the stock prices.
You've nailed it. In the last 5 years, a lot of these companies hold back going public until they are so highly valued that a lot of the initial jump has already been pushed through in the venture capital phase. And they come out at such a high valuation that they have to trade for a while and undercut before they start to grow a price of their shares into their earnings.
So, all right, yeah, Eric, we're up against the clock here, coming at the 8:30 jobs number. Eric Kroll, author of The Life Cycle Trade, following IPOs like nobody else on Wall Street. Eric, we'll be dialing you up again real soon. Thank you so much for the great information.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here with you guys. We'll see you.
Okay. AB, where's AB?
Okay. I'm back.
I went wide already. I went wide a minute early just in case, you know, something buggered up.
All right. I am not going to jump the gun on this. I'm not going to jump the gun on the levels. I'm just going to let it flow.
Well, give us a preview. We're going to get the levels of the jobs number from your AB right now.
If they like this number, I mean, you could get back a lot of those losses from yesterday. On the downside, yesterday's low in S&P, 94.25. They undercut that a little
bit. Looking for 200,000 is the estimate. Non-farm payrolls, the previous was 275, so it's expected to go down a little bit. The unemployment rate, though, is expected to fall from 3.9% to 3.8%. So a little bit conflicting data that we're expected to get less payrolls than last month. But again, that unemployment rate is actually supposed to dip. Hourly wages are supposed to grow from, we got 0.1% last month's report. We're supposed to get
0.3%. Uh-oh. Rot row. It looks hot. I'm not jumping the gun, but it looks hot. Went down, tested yesterday's low. Haven't taken out the low yet from yesterday. 91.5. Quick Got there really Man. Close.
Non-farm payrolls, super hot. 303,000 versus 212,000.
The U.S.
303,000. It's still jobland. The jobs. No. There's been no weakness in the labor market like Powell anticipated. Unemployment went down from 3.9% to 3.8%. Companies
oh my
don't
gosh,
care about interest
number.
Rates.
They're rallying it.
It's rallying.
Course,
it's rallying.
It's good
There's
for
no
the economy.
Recession.
The
they don't know what strong. To do. They There's don't know no what recession. The algos are like. It's good for the economy, but it's bad for our interest rate outlook. What do we do? Interest rates are going to win, I think. I don't know. But maybe not. It's trying to come back.
Okay. Hourly wages year over year came in line.
BLT says no, thank you.
Oh, look at this rally. Wow. All right. So
yeah, TLT, lie detector test, TLT, fade the rally. I'm fading the rally. Lie detector test says no, thank you. TLT, straight down.
I'm not fading the rally. The U.S. economy, it's the strongest in the world.
Yeah.
We're
fading
no, we just keep
they
going.
Had it.
You don't
Stay
bet
with
against
it. I'm fading.
You don't bet. You don't bet against the U.S. economy. That's one of Warren Buffett's main rules.
We're not betting. We're trading. So we're definitely not going. I'm not short my long-term account, but I'll tell
you
from a trading perspective, we just got a little pop here. I think you're fading it.
I like that. I like that. We're not betting against the economy. We're just making a short-term trade. U.S. hourly wages came in at 4.1% in line. I think that's significant because last month it was 4.3%. So to see that come down a little bit month over month, well, it's year over year, but to see that come down from last month's year over year number could be good for inflation. Hourly wages, like wage growth, is one of the drivers of inflation. So if you saw that number come in really hot, the market could interpret that as bad inflation data. I mean, either way, weakness in the labor market, you could argue that would have been good for markets because it means the Fed's more likely to cut. You could argue it's bad for the markets because that means it's close to a recession. So I guess we'll see if good news is good news.
Educational moment here real quick for Gay Fave. He's asking what the TLT is. The TLT is a 20-year Treasury bond ETF that reflects the movement in the U.S. bonds right there, the 30-year Treasuries. Basically, when the TLT is, it's contra. If they think interest rates are going down, it will go up. If they think interest rates are going up, it will go down. And if they'll hold steady. So it's just a play on interest rates, inversely correlated. 20-year treasury. And they don't
I don't know how they're going to hold this green. I'm shocked. I'm absolutely shocked. The S&Ps went green there. I think it was a gift. I think algos just whipsaw. I think you got to play that whipsaw. TLT is straight down, no bounce whatsoever. IWM's going down here now too. S&Ps, I don't. But I guess if they're going to buy tech or something, maybe the rotation's going to keep you higher. But this is just too hot. It's too hot. Yeah. Like if they were worried about interest rates, this is doing nothing to ease those concerns. This is going to be like three is going to go off the table here on these numbers like this.
Yeah. Maybe Kashkari was looking at these numbers, huh?
Actionable trading ideas was right there. 5/14/20 on the SPY. Now just sold off a buck.
Boom. Okay. All right, Dennis. So what I noticed is that we didn't make a new high or low from the pre-market session, which is kind of unusual, right? There was no pop. I mean, we got nowhere near the pre-market high, and they tried to defend yesterday's low. So, right? I mean, you probably things didn't move enough for you to get any juice out there because we are still. I mean, where were we trading? This is one thing I always like to look at. At 8:30,
we were up around 5. We're popping again.
Yeah, we're popping. Yep. This market doesn't know.
It is
what
wild.
To do.
We just ride the buck right back. We're right back up. We're not quite to where we were, but we are getting it back. This popping again here. IWM, you're seeing separation here, folks. IWM is not rallying, not much. So you're seeing that separation. TLT straight down, holding the IWM down. I think you're going to see stocks like NVIDIA up $7 here now. What do they do? They're flying into what? Well, okay, well, if interest rates are not going to be going down for this foreseeable future, what works? The AI trade works. AMD, which has commentary, it's up here. NVIDIA is trying to pop back here this morning. I don't know. Your chart's lagging there, Joel. You're looking yesterday's.
I got the intraday one.
We're up $7 here on NVIDIA.
Yeah,
the tech trade is bouncing back here right now.
Yeah,
tech trade is bouncing back.
I had to go to the pre-market.
Amazon is up at session highs. This is what they do. They separate it. They're separating it. IWM still red, and they're buying. That's what they're coming in. They're buying the tech.
Yep, Meta, who is having a nice move to the upside. On days like this, it's tough because, I mean, if you look at a lot of these stocks, you know, Meta is a little bit different, but there's a lot of air in here on the upside. That's why, you know, if they could really get this going, you know, above, I think the key will be taking out that free market high at 52.1950. There's not much in there, but, and I wanted to say this before, I just use an AMD as an example. There was a real, after all the activity, there was a really patient seller, 180 to 182. Like, you know what, get me out. I know it's been a big run. I want to peel back here. Well, yesterday, they're like, okay, we're not getting 180 anymore. We got to go out there and start slamming bids. And then you get that kind of sell-off. So now, you know, you would say, you know, let it breathe a little bit. You know, don't put your offers out there. If we're all in bright, we would say, let it breathe a little bit. Let the buyers come in. But the sellers are still out there. So we closed right before the print came. We were at 1650 in the S&Ps, and that's just off the pre-market highs. So basically nothing's been decided since that number came out.
No. Well, on the S&Ps, it hasn't. The TLT, it's definitely been decided. We just went straight down here. Safety trade, not safety trade. IWM is at its lows of the session here, Joel. Okay. So some stuff, again, we've got to stop being so S&P centrally focused here, because the S&P is just so bloody diversified. It just holds up, you know, and if they're coming into the NVIDIAs and the AMDs and they're coming in the tech trade, the S&Ps aren't going to show that. But the IWM is clearly showing what we should be seeing. You know, it should be seeing that, hey, all these stocks, all these companies that need lower rates now are not getting them. They're not coming right now. You know, this number here is going to make the Fed really think about, you know, higher rates for longer here. So what worked in that environment all last year? What worked? The NVIDIAs, those stocks worked last year. Now, what doesn't work is IWM. So if we're going to have higher rates for longer, the small caps are going to suffer. TAN is probably getting smacked here, I would imagine. It's early here yet. TAN isn't trading, but it's offered down. But if you go to ENPH, down $4 here right now. Did have a headline on that too. KRE, I would imagine getting hit down 1% of the KRE right now. I mean, you're just at this point where you've got to be trading the rotation. If you're a trader and you're not respecting that rotation, you're missing out on a lot of money, because it's clear what they're hitting here today is that stuff that's going to be interest rate sensitive.
Well, you know, we talk a lot about how a lot of this data that we get from the Labor Bureau statistics is lagging. We just talked about the headline earlier today about Apple laying people off and whatnot. Is there a chance, and I've heard from other, you know, market experts that the labor market is weakening. Is there a chance that it is weaker and that we just haven't seen it yet? Or, I mean, I feel like people have been saying that for a year and a half, and then month after month, we get hot labor data. It's hard to decipher exactly what's going on. And this was, I mean, bringing up I was making this point the other day that just because you see the headline, and we hear more about Apple, Meta, Amazon than most companies. We know we don't hear as much about blue collar layoffs. But when you hear the headline, Apple lays off 600 workers. Okay, but how many people does Apple employ? That's really not that big of a deal. But you might read that headline and think, oh, here it is. We're heading toward the recession. The labor market's weakening. Here come layoffs. But really, it's not the biggest deal in the world. I think the media just tends to focus more on these stocks because they're such household names. And again, we talk more about the big tech companies than basically any other sector out there. So it's confusing, I think, for a lot of people to see the headlines about these companies laying people off. Then you get the hot labor data. So it's
very confusing.
How many employees do you think in 22? How many employees do you think Apple had? And don't Google it.
I'm going to guess 200,000.
Dennis?
That's counting all like Apple Store employees and everything.
I'm just going what I got.
I'm guessing even more than that. Maybe it's 300,000.
Okay. From what I'm looking, it says 164,000.
Oh, what's the 200? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, I don't know. But that seems kind of low, because this is saying on a log of, this is just the internet, so who knows if it's actually correct.
You got to ask ChatGPT.
I'll have to go to ask ChatGPT, or I'll just go straight to the source, Wikipedia, to get all my up-to-date information.
Am I coming in
What a choppy session here, though. I mean, we are just chopping around something fiercely here.
I know.
Am I coming in okay to you guys? Because I'm having some internet issues here in the office.
You're good.
Okay. Just real quick, programming note, we have a little special interview today for the second day in a row. I mean, shout out to everyone who watched that Kendrick Perkins interview yesterday. I know it was a little bit different than what we normally do, but it was fun, Dennis, and I think we should strive to do some more fun things on the show.
I think so, too.
But at 9 a.m., we're going to be talking to Candel Therapeutics CEO Paul Peter Tok. And you know, pull up this chart real quick, Joel, because there's a reason we're going to be talking to this CEO, ticker CADL. You got to clear the search bar first.
Okay, all right, Mr. Know-it-all.
This is a small biotech company. I think the market cap after yesterday's move is around like 200 million, but working in the cancer space and got some positive trial data. So we want to bring him on and talk about it, just because it was, I mean, yesterday was a bloodbath of all bloodbaths, or I should say reversal of all reversals. But this was one of your stocks that closed higher by a large margin. So we want to bring him on. Talk a little bit about that move, talk about that trial data coming out from the company and exactly what's going on there. And I actually spoke to Paul Peter just a couple weeks ago, so that's why I reached out. I was like, man, I just talked to this guy and I see the stock moving up so much. I was like, I wonder if, I should have known after I talked to him that I should have sprinkled on it, but I usually don't do that because I don't know. I don't want anyone coming back after me and getting me in trouble. I don't know if I'm allowed to or not, but either way, we're going to bring him on at 9 a.m. to talk about it.
Nice.
All right. Other headlines we should get to. Let's bring up, we've gone long in this show without talking about Tesla. We talked about Tesla's strength after the negative news that we got on delivery numbers the other day. And that's something I was watching yesterday. I was looking at names that were in some of these sectors that you would have expected to get really crushed that didn't get crushed as hard as other names. And I've been seeing some, I saw the very first Cybertruck I've ever seen in the wild yesterday in Detroit.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I was driving by our office right down here and I saw it. It was cool to see. I mean, I wouldn't buy one, but it was cool to see. But either way, Tesla only closed, or did Tesla close in the green yesterday? Barely?
I mean, more than barely. And Dennis, you were talking about this. I mean, they're doing everything but the kitchen sink at this thing.
Analysts are downgrading. The analyst commentary has been terrible.
Watch your offers, Dennis.
I can't stop buying.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I know I'm trying to do commentary here and I'm getting picked off left and right. This show is costing me a lot of money today, I'll tell you that much. Tesla is just, the numbers were terrible. The analyst commentary was terrible. Everything they're saying, everything that they're doing right now just looks terrible. Hybrid, eating electric vehicles lunch right now. And yet the stock doesn't really go down. I mean, we're in the same spot. We're higher than we were 2 weeks ago. Prior to that, those terrible numbers. So that's just telling you. And again, I'm going to have to.
You want to hop off that as well?
I'm getting kicked off much
here. Go.
But all I'm saying is when stocks stop going down on bad news, it's usually the sign of seller exhaustion.
Okay. Well, why don't you go ahead and hop? We got this other guest coming on at 9 o'clock. So Aaron and I got it. We can take it from here. So if you just want to hop off and hop on, if you see something else, it's fine. What Dennis is talking about here, they came down. They tried to press to yesterday's low. I'll just show some spy so it doesn't mess up my charts. And they couldn't take out yesterday's low. They tried. Better showing in the S&P here. And now you're coming, and that's what I said off the initial number. If we start going to the upside, we just came down very quickly through this area. And if anything, you see in these markets, when stocks go down quickly through an area, they'll come back up just as fast. So they're like, when I say there's absolutely nothing in here, I'd say 52.35. I hope I have that on my sheet. That was your low from Tuesday, but just the fact that it was just absolutely obliterated gives it less significance. Also, I mentioned this level when we came down earlier in the week that, and I'll get my little tracker out here to give you guys the best possible information. But I keep talking about March 20th, right? And that's when good old Jerome came out and said, everything's cool. Rates are going down 3 times. And this was on this day. That low was 52.33. And it held up on Tuesday. We cracked it yesterday. So that's minor resistance. But right now, the scenario of, strong economy, good for the stock market.
Yeah, and I think it'd be different if yesterday we closed at record highs and then, but I think after yesterday's sell-off, I don't know, because yesterday's sell-off was like predicated on this idea that we're not going to get enough rate cuts. And then now this data is conducive to that argument that we're not going to get enough rate cuts. So it is like, I just think overall it's a confusing market. I mean, not that the market's never not confusing. It usually is in some way or another. But right now, I mean, like the whole thing with where the Fed officials are all over the place, the market's all over the place, investors are all over the place on calls. And it's fun. It's why we do this. It's why you have a lot of volatility. You have a lot of uncertainty. I think at the end of the day, though, interest rates aside, this and that aside, like you said, a strong economy is typically good for the stock market. The economy isn't the stock market. You hear that all the time. In COVID, after the big COVID crash and the market came roaring back and we were like hitting new all-time highs by the end of May 2022, that wasn't the economy. You had so many people out of work. You had people not working. You had people getting paid to not work. I mean, the economy wasn't great. Things were shut down, but the market was great. But that's not the norm. I mean, it's typically when you have a strong economy, stocks tend to do well. So at the end of the day, I mean, I think the Fed now it has like room to, again, keep interest rates where they are. Maybe we're looking at one rate cut. Maybe we're looking at two. But how much does that matter if the economy stays so strong? And that's at the end of the day, high interest rates aren't inherently bad for stocks as long as those high interest rates are coupled with strong economic growth. And I mean, you have that right now. You have high interest rates, but you also have strong growth.
I want to address a comment here from CC64YT. People are putting their stops under that double bottom. Watch it get wrecked in a few minutes, a few hours. That's important. Like if we go red, now we're above the close, but that double bottom. But you also have to think about people that. And I'm not saying this is a scenario. I missed the dip yesterday. I missed the dip. The economy's strong. I missed the low. So there's two schools of thought there. But right now, very important. Keep an eye on that pre-market low, 91.50. Also keep an eye on that for your individual stocks. Also, I just wanted to make one other question. I talked about this with Dennis yesterday. And the spider, with their trading hours, and I'm not sure with the expiration, but the spider, the all-time closing high in the spider yesterday or from before was 523.17. You hit that on the 27th of March. And so, it's not a high or a low, but I always talk about closing prices. And I was looking at the S&Ps yesterday morning. And I noted in the morning when we were up near that over 5,300, I'm like, we have the all-time closing high at 5,308.50. That turned out to be a double close area because the previous close was 08 and a quarter. Yesterday's high, right to the penny, 08.50. So sometimes when the technical analysis, when you're looking at it, you want to look at the double tops, the double bottoms and everything. But you got to pay attention to the closes, the all-time closing high. Last example on this, and I'll move on, was the Googster, right? They're buying HubSpot. Oh, it's going to be the greatest thing ever. Rallies up to 160 in pre-market trading. They changed their mind about it. And the stock, of course, market dynamics yesterday came into play too. But on that rally in the morning, I alerted you guys to the all-time closing high. At 156 and a half, right? And it was 2 days ago that happened. You got to 156.55. So using your all-time closing high price, you could have wiggled out there. That was up on Wednesday's session. Take it away, AB.
Yeah, I mean, and just but go, you know, finishing my point I was making earlier, everyone wants rate cuts. And I think, you know, depending on what types of stocks you're in, if you're in very growthy stocks, the sectors I was talking about earlier, the clean energy stocks, you know, you really are fiending for these rate cuts in a way. But at the end of the day, like, we usually get rate cuts when the economy is slowing. And when the economy is slowing, that's typically not great for stocks. So it's like, you gotta, I guess, like, be able to understand that the U.S. economy, like, when it's not slowing down like it is now, again, that interest rates, like historically, I think stocks have actually, you know, Dietrich brought this point up to us before, that stocks actually tend to do like well when interest rates are higher, because that means the economy is strong too, typically. And I mean, you always have exceptions to this, but I don't know. I mean, we can make a prediction, I guess. I think we'll still see a rate cut this year, at least, if not two. But I think the three that Powell was talking about just 3 weeks ago, I mean, that Wednesday where we made the new all-time highs, where he was talking about three rate cuts. I don't think we're going to necessarily get those three rate cuts anymore. And I think most people are now questioning that, even the own Fed officials are. But, you know, I don't think one or two, even though we were, you know, anticipating six at the beginning of the year, I don't think only getting one or two means we're going to have this huge sell-off. I will say, when we started to see the market kind of turn over earlier this week, it didn't to me feel like that we had topped out and that this was going to be the beginning of a bear market. It felt like a healthy flush. And I do still think we're due for a healthy flush. Yesterday was maybe, you know, maybe a little bit too much, too quick to be considered a healthy flush. But I think if the S&P 500 and the Qs, you know, retract by, say, 3-5% over the next 3 weeks, I think you'll have a lot of people coming in and saying, Joel, that, oh my God, here we go. Market's done. Here comes the bears. Here comes the bear market. But I don't think that's necessarily true. I think we can have a nice little pullback and still continue our trend. I mean, the S&P 500 went up 9% in the first quarter. That's like the whole year's worth of the typical.
Oh, you gotta take off your I know you're talking a little bit long term here, and then you're talking a little bit short term too. But, you know, sometimes, you know, what you have to put on is like the consolidation goggles, and what is going to happen? What are that, like, we're, I'm already looking catalyst next week. What do you have next week? You have a CPI number. You have a PPI number, right?
Yeah.
Then what do you have? What do you have at the end of next week? What is the most important fundamental information you could get, Aaron? What starts at the end? Actually, it starts on Wednesday, but kicks into gear on Friday. What
earnings
do we got
season?
Next?
We got bank earnings coming next week.
There you go.
Well,
so
Joel, I mean, just to make the point, because like I do tend to talk more, you know, from like a macro perspective and longer time frame, because I don't trade like you and Dennis trade, you know, intraday, looking at the charts, this and that. I know most people in our chat do, so I apologize for that. And I'm learning from you and Dennis about how to trade more intraday and how to like decipher.
It's not necessarily a good thing. I'm not saying it from you from a trading perspective. I mean, it's good because we need to give a longer term perspective. What is important in our show is that we talk about the different time frames. We talk about the dailies, and the dailies lead to the weeklies, and the weeklies lead to the monthlies. So you'd be surprised. I mean, we don't have all the profiles of our chats, people in our chat right here, but I know there's a lot of intermediate, longer term traders in here. So it's good to cover the whole gambit. So don't apologize. I mean,
you can also
over trade too.
Because I think a lot of our audience is more, you know, watching for the day trading aspect and stuff. So either way, let's get to some more headlines before we bring on Paul Peter-Tak again in about 5 minutes here, the CEO of Candel Therapeutics.
I'm sorry. Someone's asked about Dennis said that he was getting kicked off.
Picked off.
Yeah. Guy Ben-Gurion, picked off, P-I-C-K-E-D, not kicked off. I did kick him off the show and told him to go trade. But the dentist has a lot of positions in a lot of different stocks and a lot of different ETFs. And then also he tries to make markets in the pre-market. So he has to be constantly updated. If he's making markets and stuff, he has to be constantly updating. So if he goes on one of his 5-minute rants and there's a 10-minute, a 10-point pop in the spooze, then that changes his positions, it changes his trading strategies, and so it's picked off and not kicked off. And then that, just to further accentuate that point, when he goes wide off those numbers, that means he'll pull all of his markets, he'll pull all of his orders and go wide. So, you know, if you see a huge move, you'll have to go a long way to get picked off. So you're right. When you're market making, you're fading the market, basically, you know, putting sell orders way above the market and buy orders way below the market. But just wanted to clarify that for Guy in the chat. And also, I wanted to give a shout out to all of our Twitter followers, people on Twitter listening to us. If you guys are out there today, you guys are out there in force. You guys put some questions in there. We're going to do probably a Twitter stock of the day to follow. Please put those in there. And before I forget, I want to give a shout out to the kids, the students at the Windsor University and Windsor Business Club. Man, these guys are smart. They got a good portfolio going. They're trying to figure out how to limit exposure. And I know they like to listen to the show. So just wanted to give another shout out to them.
Yeah, and it's great. I mean, to be getting into this stuff that early and learning about the markets, learning about investing in general, because I think that's like the biggest problem for a lot of young people is just financial literacy, understanding. I mean, you look at a chart of like people that, you know, save money in a savings account versus investing it in the market. And here I am again talking about like long-term time horizon, but it's incredible. I mean, you get that compounding interest over time. You're invested in even if you're just very passively buying VU or buying SPY over time and you're collecting, you know, it's not high dividend, but you're collecting some of those dividends. You're historically going to get some pretty good appreciation there, but I don't think there's really an age that's too early to at least start learning about this. I'm not saying go have your 13-year-old go start trading on Robinhood. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying go teach them a little bit about the market, and college is probably the best time to do it. Even though I don't know about you, Joel. I mean, you were probably a little bit smarter than me with your money, but I didn't have too much money in college to start investing. I wish I did, but then I started, working toward the end of college and started trading a little bit. Timing wise for me, I got pretty lucky because like COVID hit and then I was all in on the markets, starting in 2020. I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. This is so fun. I was trading options. I was doing this. And you learn through making mistakes. And I think that's the biggest thing is that people are scared to make mistakes when it comes to their own money. So it's always good to start small, maybe start with a paper trading account and you get better at it over time.
Yeah, I mean, this is a whole nother show, or something that we could talk about for, young investors and stuff. I'll just give you one thing I said to the students yesterday. No matter what you're doing, what job you have, what age you are, try to put $50 away into the month, or if you have $100, maybe 33 into the Qs, 33 into the S&P, 33 into something else, dollar cost average, see how things look, perpetually the market does go higher, right, over the course of time. So that's the simplest way to start indexing. I've done a lot of it myself. Yeah, you don't get to 78, 90, 100% gators or losers, but if you're indexing quite a bit, you can keep up with the market.
Real quick, some stock headlines. Yesterday, iRobot announced a new product, IRBP. And it's kind of... What?
870.
I know.
Holy mackerel.
It's getting crushed, but it did pop a little bit on this announcement of a new thing. The only reason I think this is significant, it was kind of like in line with what we were hearing from Apple about these like in-home robots to help you with doing different things. So, I mean, I still think a lot of this stuff is down the road, but like, and we've had Roombas for a while, these like automatic vacuum cleaners and stuff. Joel, do you have one?
Yeah, Lisa bought one and it sits in the corner.
It doesn't do anything?
No, she bought it and she hasn't been using it that much. But yeah, I'm going to, next time Dennis talks about like robotics and, humanoids and stuff, I'm going to take a look at this chart. But
does your dog like the robot or no?
Dog can't hear.
Okay. All right. Well, I just brought that up because I was like, oh, okay, like, you
this
know,
news.
It seems like this, you know, at home robot stuff is starting to get some traction. And I mean, let us know in the chat if you have a Roomba. Is it helpful? Is it not helpful? I don't really know. But all right. It is 9 a.m. We're going to do a quick interview again, a little special interview this morning. We've got Paul Peter Talk, the CEO of Candel Therapeutics, hanging out backstage. Let's go ahead and bring him on. All right, Paul Peter, I'm lucky enough to be speaking to you for the second time in the matter of about 3 weeks. How are you doing today?
Yeah, very good morning. Great to see you again. I'm very well. Yesterday was a fantastic day for Candel Therapeutics, and I hope for patients.
Yeah, I'm sure you're doing well after yesterday's price movement. So let's before we get into it, I'm obviously familiar with the company because I mentioned we just spoke a few weeks ago. But for those in our audience who aren't familiar with Candel, what is it that you guys do? What do you guys specialize in the biotech space?
Yeah, we develop highly innovative medicines for very difficult to treat cancers. So think of pancreatic cancer. These were data that we released today. A form of lung cancer called non-small cell lung cancer in patients who ran out of options, basically. Now, we've presented in the past very encouraging data, and we'll have new data that are imminent that we will present this quarter that we've not presented yet in lung cancer. And then we have two fully enrolled clinical trials in prostate cancer, phase 2 and phase 3. So this year is a super important year for the company, many readouts. And then we have a second medicine that we just presented data in Nature. And we got fast track designation for all of these programs. And for this program, we are focused on brain cancer, very difficult to form of brain cancer called glioblastoma.
Yeah, so let's talk about the news we got yesterday. So I understand it was based on some trial data from or clinical trial of CAN-2409. Which drug is that? What is it treating? And where are you in the pipeline on that?
Yeah, CAN-2409 is a so-called viral immunotherapy. So it's a virus that we have engineered in such a way that we can vaccinate the patient against the patient's own tumor. Basically, we reprogram, we educate the T cells, the immune cells of the patient, how to recognize the tumor cells at the site of the injection, but also against the uninjected distant metastasis. So we give 2 or 3 administrations. It's really patient-friendly to get durable responses, as we've shown yesterday, against these tumors. So what does that mean for a patient? That they live longer with a good quality of life. And that's what matters to patients, and that's also what matters to the regulators. So we are in phase 2 in so-called borderline resectable pancreatic cancer. That's where we presented the data in a press release. We are also in phase 2 in non-small cell lung cancer, specific form of lung cancer. Patients who have failed chemotherapy, they failed immune checkpoint inhibitors, they have an expected median overall survival of not more than 1 year. And we will present top-line overall survival data based on this phase 2 trial in the next few weeks to months. And that's, again, the hardest endpoint you can get. So everything that would look better than 1 year survival would be spectacular, especially when there's no negative impact on quality of life in terms of toxicity and safety issues. And then finally, we are in phase 3 in prostate cancer, in early localized prostate cancer, where no new medicine has been approved in the last 30 years. So there's a huge opportunity to address this unmet need and to create a lot of value for our investors.
Got it. And Paul Peter, I know you're, you know, running the company, you're probably not watching the stock that much. That's not, you know, you've got bigger things to worry about. But I mean, do you ever worry when you see a move like this, you know, up 280% in a day? I mean, do you ever worry that it's, you know, people coming in just for a quick trade, they see the stock is hot, as opposed to investors really buying into, you know, Candel's like mission over time?
There's always the possibility of volatility. And that's what you will see with new biotech companies that are still in an early stage of the existence as a company. So company, the stock will go up and down. However, ultimately, we expect it to go up because the value of the company will be dependent on the probability that our medicines will be approved. Ultimately, the value is created in the marketplace where medicines are sold because they address a huge unmet need. For every indication that we pursue, we have already proof of concept that it works in patients, in humans. This is not about only mouse data. We've dosed CAN-2409 more than 1,000 patients. The second point is the regulators seem to agree that there is something really special here. We got fast track designation, which means a lot, from the FDA for every single indication. So we are in late stage development. We will create a lot of value. So although there may be volatility in the near term, we expect the share price to go up because we believe that the value that we created based on the data is divorced from the current market cap as it was 2 days ago, but also as it is today.
And then, you know, Paul Peter, right now, I mean, it's been kind of a tough market the past couple of years for biotech. Higher interest rates makes borrowing more expensive. How are you guys doing on cash?
Yeah, so we have done a straight to market IPO in 2021 when the markets were already very difficult. We did not do a crossover, but, you know, we did not go back to the market since then. We have a very lean organization. We did not create a big fixed cost and including a big headcount. So we've been able to deliver on every catalyst. This year, we will have six catalysts. One of them was six shots on goal, basically. One was a shot in the goal yesterday for pancreatic cancer. We believe that at the right time, we will be able to create value and secure extension of our runway. Of course, there are different options that we would consider, including strategic partnerships with pharmaceutical companies. And of note, there's quite a lot of interest from pharma at this time because there are not many companies in biotech that have the readout of multiple phase two and phase three trials this year. And the big pharma companies need to fill their pipelines.
All right, we're on the line with Paul Peter. He is the president, chief executive officer of Candel Therapeutics, coming out with some positive data today. Paul, I'm going to go a little bit off the just a specific subject here, but like your background. I mean, what made you in September of 2020, just after the pandemic, make a, you know, a leap to start a company like this? And I know it's for, you know, helping people and curing things, but to me, that looks like a pretty interesting timing of the move. And also, what has been your biggest challenge being a CEO of a startup biotech company?
Yeah, great question. So I'm a physician scientist. I've treated patients. I've done a lot of research. And at some point, I became global head of development of GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and the chief immunology officer. And I think I'm able to say that I've been able to recognize molecules that will become medicines, because I've done that again and again in academia, in big pharma, and in biotech. And in 2020, I found these two molecules that were completely unknown, that were completely under the radar. And I thought, you know, these are not placebo effects, right? If you see that the tumor disappears or stabilizes, patients live much longer, that's real. So that's why I decided to join this company. And with my mixed background as a physician, scientist, business leader, I've worked in venture capital, I thought with this background, I can help this company to get to the next stage and to get these medicines to as many patients in high unmet need as possible and to create a huge turnaround story in the industry. And that's what we're trying to achieve here. Of course, there have been many challenges. The biggest challenge was probably that the markets were not very receptive. So it was a difficult time, but we got through it, actually. We get to all these catalysts. We always do what we say that we do. And what was also not helpful is that one of the legacy companies of Candel has been in stealth mode for many, many years. So people had never heard of these programs, like myself, actually, before 2020. So then people thought, oh, whoa, a biotech company that claims to be in phase three, where does this come from? Right. So it made people maybe even somewhat suspicious initially. All of that is gone. We filled in all the scientific gaps. We just published in Nature. We got three fast track designations from the regulators last year. So now it's a whole different story.
Paul Peter, a second ago, you mentioned the potential of exploring some strategic partnerships. Does that include potentially, you know, an acquisition? I mean, a lot of times you see acquisitions in the biotech space, and if you, you know, with your guys's, you know, trial data that you're getting in the market cap, you'd imagine that's attractive to a lot of larger pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah. So as a CEO, I'd like to have as much optionality as possible, Right. And of course, it would be possible to be acquired, but it's not our preferred option. But everything has its own price, right? So if somebody knocks on the door tomorrow and says, we are going to buy Candel for $100 billion, it's going to be difficult to turn that down, right? But my preferred option is actually to partner. That could be, for example, a co-commercialization deal for the lead asset, CAN-2409. So why would we do that? Because if pharma companies, and I've worked for pharma in the past, are really good at one thing, it's at late stage development and commercialization, getting this to as many patients who need these treatments as possible and to really extract the commercial value. So that would be the right thing to do, probably, if we are able to get to the right deal. We could also go all the way ourselves. We could also work in a kind of externalization model, that we work with an external company that would take this to the commercial space, because I do not want to cannibalize my R&D organization in my ideal option, because we have a unique pipeline. Behind CAN-2409, there's CAN-3110, where we have very encouraging data in glioblastoma, brain cancer, just published in Nature. Behind that, we have very encouraging data preclinical. We have a late-breaking abstract this month at the AACR, the major oncology research meeting. So there's more. So we could do this again and again, and basically partner late-stage programs like Genmab did or Actelion in the past. And these have been very successful from a business perspective.
Got it. Well, Paul Peter, thanks for hopping on with us last minute. I know you got a presentation to get to today, so I'll let you get on with that. But again, congrats on the positive data that you guys got yesterday. Anytime you got more big news, we can bring you on to give some updates to our audience. Again, thank you so much for hopping on last minute.
Thanks for having us, or for having me. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
All right, guys. Again, that was Paul Peter Tak, the CEO and president of Candel Therapeutics. Huge day yesterday. It was good to get some more insights and some more color on that move from Paul Peter.
Huge shout out to AB. And this, that one was all AB, folks. He scrambled. So big shout out to AB here for scrambling and doing
that.
We
do what we can to bring you guys, you know, the breaking
news. You know what?
The top headlines. Well, when I saw there was only one stock yesterday, everything else was in the red. There was only one stock that closed up that much, and it was Candel. And I was like, oh, I know Paul Peter. I got to reach out to him. We got to bring him on. So hope you guys enjoyed that. But we are running late here. 9:12.
I'll have Jason take you off double extra secret probation. Okay. For doing that. Just to let you know.
It was so double secret. I didn't even know about it. I didn't even know I was on there. All right, guys. Well, thanks for tuning in to Pre-Market Prep this morning. Again, crazy show between the jobs numbers, last-minute interviews, this and that, IPOs. Shout out to Eric Kroll as well for joining us earlier. We will be going to live trading after this. This stream will redirect you there. Joel, who are we going to be talking to next Monday?
Rocky Horner. Ooh. Rocky Horner will be joining us. Always great to get Rocky's perspective on the markets. Very calm, cool, and collected. And I know who's going to be bummed because Triple D isn't going to be out on Monday. So he's hopefully going to be out of his position.
I'm stuck with just you, Joel.
Yeah. We'll
let me get
some good things up.
I'm not going to ask you for a price prediction today. I'll ask you for a score prediction on the Tigers game.
Score prediction? It's kind of chilly out, is it?
It is.
Yeah. Cold. And Scooble is pitching. They're playing. I go a low scoring game, maybe all like right. 3-2 or something like that. And I don't know what the over under is, and I really don't care. But okay. No Michigan sports this weekend. Final Four. I like Purdue, but UConn is
that's your pick. You picked Purdue.
I picked Purdue in three of my six polls, right?
Okay.
But the one that I'm in best position in to win out of 288 people is if UConn wins.
Yeah, but that's going to be tough because I assume a lot of people have UConn.
No. I'm the scoring. I have.
Oh, so you already have the lead. So if UConn ends up winning.
No, I don't have the lead. I'm in fifth. But everyone, you know how they show highest possible points?
Yeah, max points possible. Yeah.
Since UConn, Purdue, and then UConn. If it's UConn, Purdue, and Purdue wins, I'm out.
I mean, that Edie guy looks tough to stop right now. But if anyone can stop him, it'll be Dan Hurley and that UConn team. But all right, guys, again, thanks for tuning in with us today. We'll see you guys on Monday. Hope everyone has a great weekend and a great day today. Trading should be some increased volatility with that jobs report this morning. Take care. Smash the like if you haven't already.
We'll be right back.